Welcome to the Culture Exchange podcast. My name is Frauke.
Hello, everyone. My name is Marie-Christine. Together, we are hosting this podcast for the international community, where we talk about living and working abroad, expat life, welcoming special guests who share their expertise.
With our Culture Exchange podcast, we are providing a platform regarding the topics of culture, identity, and belonging, to raise awareness and give insights on how to navigate the challenges and opportunities of a multicultural life.
Join us on our journey around the world.
Automate the predictable so you can humanize the exceptional.
Welcome to another episode of the Culture Exchange podcast. Today we're sitting together with Dr. Stefan Rupert again, because we already had the pleasure chatting with you in episode 32. Can I Understand Culture? That was the title. A very successful episode with many listeners reaching out to us. So here we are again, Stefan, and talking about AI and its impact on human.
Yeah, good morning. And thanks for having me again. It's a big honor to be for the second time in your podcast. And it's great that your listeners obviously are interested in AI and the impact of AI on culture, on thinking, on our brains. That's really great. Thank you.
Thank you for being here today. And for the ones who have not listened to this specific episode, our guest today, Dr. Stefan Rupert, wears a lot of hats. He is an intercultural trainer who moves between Germany and China for a living, teaching business communication in Hamburg 1 week and culture studies in Shanghai the next week. And when he's not decoding culture, he's decoding AI through his brains and bots lab, helping trainers and teams actually collaborate with the machines instead of fearing them. So, Stefan, welcome back and let's get into it.
Yes. So, Stefan, you've been thinking deeply about AI and cognition. You describe AI as changing cognitive processes slowly and without us even noticing. Why does the invisible nature of this shift makes it so much more dangerous than, say, the arrival of smartphones? Yeah. What is your thought on that? Yeah.
I would like to start with three short disclaimers before we discuss about the dangerous sides of AI. So the first disclaimer is, actually, I'm a big fan of AI. So it might sound like I'm super skeptical and I think we should turn this all off. That's not the case. I'm training people on AI. I'm using AI. I like AI, and I think it has a big potential. Mm-hmm. The second disclaimer is, of course, I will polarize a little bit in this podcast and also in my LinkedIn post, but it's not that human cognition was always fantastic. And when humans think, it's always great. And the moment we turn on AI, everything is bad and everything is just homogeneous. So it's not a black and white thinking. It's more a step-by-step unconscious regression. And the third thing is, I will also quote some studies. I think nobody has a final judgment on where this will lead us and what this will do with human cognition. We see the first studies now in 2025 and 2026. And people see that there are dangerous effects which should really worry us. But there's no final judgment, and people use AI in a million different ways. So it's not that this is a field where we have a final conclusion. And I think the dangerous part is as you know, we still see AI as a productivity tool. We talk a lot about tools and prompts and stuff. Mm-hmm. But AI is actually a technology which changes or which impacts our cognition. The way we think, the way we innovate, the way we the way we talk to each other, the way we interact. Mm-hmm. And this happens unconsciously. So it's not that suddenly you realize everything is different, but it's a step-by-step regression to the middle. And I think this is the biggest risk, that we don't realize this. And after working for a while with AI, people cannot even tell, was this my idea or was this the AI idea?
Yeah, so it's true. Absolutely.
Yeah,
good point. Exactly.
So I think if you are aware of what's happening and aware what AI does, it's not as risky as if you think this is my own thinking, this is my own reasoning, but actually AI had an impact.
Mm. Yeah. Where do you think is the line for you? I mean, between AI as a tool, you just mentioned it, that actually extends our thinking mm-hmm. and working, and AI as a substitute for it. So how do you know actually when you have crossed that line?
Yeah, I think it's a bit the line between cognitive offloading and cognitive surrender. So these are the two terms which are used. And in a certain way, I think you also mentioned it, with a navigation system, with a calculator, we do cognitive offloading. Yeah, we say it's a burden. It's a big effort to calculate something. So I have my calculator on my smartphone. I just use this. That's cognitive offloading. And the other thing is really cognitive surrender, where you say, I just take everything AI gives me. I don't question it a lot and I don't think anymore. But even in this cognitive offloading, I think we don't train the muscle of critical thinking anymore in a way we did it before. And that's, I think, the difference to a calculator. Because yes, of course, we lost the ability to calculate in our head. Yeah. Most young people cannot do this anymore. I still learned this in school, but younger people cannot do it. But now we offload the burden of critical thinking. Mm-hmm. We develop from thinkers to selectors.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So we offload this burden of thinking, of researching, of questioning things, of building our own opinion, and instead we do something which is sometimes called reactive writing. We just select. The AI gives us different outputs and we just say, hey, this sounds good, this sounds good. And then we put the pieces together. Mm-hmm. So we more manage output instead of thinking. And the research shows that if we don't train this muscle of critical thinking, we somehow lose the ability. And I think that's more worrying than losing the ability to navigate or to calculate.
Yeah, it's a good point that we're losing actually so many skills. And what you're saying is that actually that what happens, that we move from what do I think to, or what we should actually ask ourselves is, do I agree with AI and what is proposed? Yeah. So this is what you actually propose here and what we should all do going forward, to actually think about, do I agree with what they actually propose?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And studies show, there's a study from Google DeepMind, and they show if we use, for example, the autocomplete function, which is in my eyes a very mild way of using AI. It's not that we choose things where we 100% agree. It's enough that we don't disagree. So we choose the next word if we say, yeah, that's more or less okay. It's okay-ish. Mm. Yeah? And with this, step by step, we have a regression towards the opinion of the model and not our own opinion.
Mm. Be honest, is there a skill you have already felt is slipping somehow?
Yeah, I mean, I also feel that this critical thinking skill, I mean, I have a PhD in chemistry. So my whole university career was about training critical thinking. It was not about training chemistry. Yeah. It was about critical thinking.
Yeah.
And of course, I realize that sometimes I'm losing the skill and I consciously have to choose to do something without AI. Because I feel I'm getting worse at that. Also creativity. Yeah. This starting with a blank page and having this creative struggle to say, what are the first words I write on my blank page? That is disappearing, because it's so convenient to just say, AI can just give me a first proposal and then I work with that. But every time you do this, you narrow your thinking space to the proposals of AI. And I realize I'm also, I mean, it's like here, I'm living in the fourth floor. I know I should take the stairs to train my muscle. But we have an elevator. And every time I stand in the elevator, I'm like, I know I shouldn't do this. I should train my muscles. But then under time pressure, you say you don't do it.
Yeah, it's interesting. Yeah, it like takes a lot of discipline, right?
Yeah, it does. And I can imagine people working in companies where you have a lot of pressure and you have a boss who says, why did it take you 2 days to come up with this presentation? Your colleague can do it in half an hour. Yeah. Then, of course, there is a lot of pressure and there's a lot of incentive to say, hey, AI can just do it much quicker. Why should I think?
Yeah.
Where's the incentive for me to think by myself and to take more time? Yeah.
Right. But that's in schools and higher education as well, right? So we all have like these challenges right now.
Yeah, and there was a new study from China just came out a few days ago, which clearly showed if they do their homework with AI, and I mean, I saw it in action. That's a dystopia of learning. They do their homework faster, they do it better. But they don't remember what they did. So in the exam, they couldn't recall anything. And I think that's also a big risk for companies. If people just manage output and don't remember what they did, they don't learn anything.
Yeah, such a good point. They're just copy paste, basically. Yeah. So it's actually really like humans are losing skills because or due to AI. And I'm thinking more about now our international audience, you know. People lived internationally often learn to navigate actually uncertainty and complexity. These skills actually have become very important for these internationals or globally mobile people and digital nomads. So is it or will these skills become even more important in an AI-driven world now? What's your thought on that?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, after a while, I think people will recognize, and they're just starting to recognize that we are homogenizing our thinking, that we are that there's a regression to the middle. All the texts sound the same. There's no clear opinion. And I think with this, I hope at least that people will go back and say, hey, we need these critical thinkers. We need this difficult colleague. Yeah, I think you also have these people where you know... Everybody in the room agrees, and then there's this one difficult person who always says, no, I see it completely different, and then he comes up with his weird ideas or chi. But these are the people we need.
Now,
I have a good friend. He's exactly like that, and that's why I like to talk to him, because I know he will challenge me. He will challenge my assumptions. He will disagree.
Yes.
And it's really, talking to him is difficult. That's what we need. We need difficult people.
But I mean, you can even tell AI to challenge you, right?
Yeah.
So I mean, you can have that as well if you want to. They're not always like pleasant to you or trying to please.
And this makes it a little bit better. But I think it's a risk that people think with a good prompt, I can completely fix the problem. Because AI is programmed in a way and it's trained in a way it wants to please you. And even if you tell it, please be critical, challenge my assumptions, it will do it in a way to, in the end, please you. So with a good prompt and with a good setup and with a set of agents with different opinions, I think you can improve it. But you cannot really fix the fundamental problem. It reminds me a little bit in the beginning when people realized that AI is hallucinating. I mean, it's a wrong word, but it's making up facts. People said, just put into your prompt the disclaimer, please don't hallucinate.
True.
That doesn't work because AI doesn't know it's hallucinating. It's not that it's doing it consciously. So, of course, with a good prompt and with a good setup and a set of agents and everything, you can improve this a lot. But it doesn't fix the fundamental problem that AI always has this regression to the middle.
Yeah. So I have a question more like on the AI systems. So is it true that they're more trained predominantly on Western data, correct? That's correct, like worldwide. So just now while traveling, you know, people all around the world communicate differently.
So those communication norms and ways of thinking, the Western way, you know, how about it when you actually travel to different countries? So recently, I've just been to Japan, you know, there is a very different thinking, you know, in terms of culture as well, or how would you reply to an email or a question, you know, and not as straightforward as maybe Western countries. So what's your take on this, you know, when AI is used on a global base, you know, what's the strengths and weaknesses for that?
Yeah, I mean, first of all, yes, it's absolutely true. Most of the models we use here are trained on Western data, on American data. Some people call it weird data, Western, educated, industrialized, rich, democratic, a term coined by Joseph Henrich. So this is the data set, and there are studies which also show that the thinking of AI, I mean, we know it doesn't think, but let's humanize it. The thinking of AI is very Western. It's very individualistic. It's very direct. And I talked to a lot of people who said the advice I get from AI is for me always too direct. I would never give advice in that way. So yes, it has this bias. And the big question is, would models trained on different data sets have a different culture and use different norms? And in a lot of regions, people are trying to set up AI systems, like in Latin America, in India, and we have a lot of different systems in China. And I didn't find so many studies about this, but some studies come to the conclusion, first of all, still these Chinese models are more Western than we think, which seems to be an indication that also these models are trained predominantly on Western data sets. I mean, some people even said maybe DeepSeek is just a kind of clone of ChatGPT, and it was extracted from ChatGPT, and that goes into that direction. There are other studies which show even between the Chinese models, there's a big difference. And some of these models seem to think more Chinese or more collectivistic or more indirect and stuff like that. But the studies clearly show there's a regression towards Western thinking. There's one study I remember where they gave Indian participants ChatGPT or a similar large language model. I think it was ChatGPT. And after a while, they lost their original language and their original thinking. And it was not just a question of style. Their writing style changed, but also their logic, their thinking style changed more and more to a typical American thinking. A colleague posted on LinkedIn, she's active in the American-German interaction, and she says, when a German asks ChatGPT to translate an email into English for an American business partner, it doesn't just translate, but it also changes the cultural clues.
Yeah, interesting.
It becomes a little bit more polite. It becomes a little bit more indirect.
Less straightforward,
And there are always these things like, how are you doing? Which Germans would not write? Germans would just say, hey, Tom, there's a problem with the project. So she realized that sometimes the way of persuading people, the style of the mail changed. And in the end, it sounded a bit inappropriate for the German listener.
This is again
a case you don't realize it immediately. You read the email and say, "Oh, that's a fair translation of what I wanted to say." But if you read it twice, you realize, "No, that's not exactly how I wanted to say it."
Interesting.
Now, I was angry when I was writing this email, and suddenly it's sugar coated, and that's not what I wanted to write. And this has a big potential. Of course, there are situations where I would say, I know my style is not appropriate for my American, Chinese, Japanese business partners, and I want to polish it a little bit and make it a little bit more indirect. But there are other cases where I would say, I want to keep my original voice. Because it's important that on the other side, people also recognize my emotion, my frustration, my anger, whatever. And if I use an AI tool to smoothen all this, I think in the end, the communication is not really human anymore.
Exactly. And the human gets replaceable, basically, as well, going forward for future jobs or anything like that. I mean, depending which areas.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it might be also a benefit, I think. So I'm not quite sure. So, but stay a little bit, because I think that's fascinating, like this convergence or diversity trap as well, because you've also said that the impact on organizations and society is what you concerns you most, right?
Yeah.
Because companies have invested enormously in cognitive diversity, let's say different life experiences, different cultural backgrounds, different ways of thinking. And you argue AI actually erases all of that. Can you unpack a little bit why you think that AI might be like this silent equalizer?
Yeah. So that's again my polarization. I mean, of course, AI is not erasing all of this, but there's a tendency, and this studies show this very clearly, that I mean, we all learned in order to be innovative, good in problem solving, creative, it makes sense to have a diverse group. Yeah, because you need this diversity in order to come up with good ideas and also to solve complex problems.
Right.
And what the AI does is on an individual level, and that's really interesting, because that's the innovation paradox. On an individual level, your ideas get better.
Yes.
So if you brainstorm alone at your desk and you do it with AI, you will have better ideas, more ideas, better ideas.
Yeah.
But if you do it on a group level, suddenly you realize that most people come up with the same idea or with ideas which are in the same frame. Yeah. And suddenly you lose diversity.
Mm.
Yeah. So you could summarize it. If you're really interested in a diverse workforce, don't invest in diversity and inclusion programs, but first turn off ChatGPT. Because now you have this fantastic diverse workforce with people from different areas of the world, with different life experience, and you give them ChatGPT, and they all come up with very similar ideas. And this, in this experiment, that was a creative experiment where people were asked to invent a new toy. A lot of people even gave their new toy the same name. Which was that was the Build a Breeze Castle. And here again, the interesting thing is everybody thinks I was super innovative. I had this disruptive, this great idea, Build a Breeze Castle. That's a fantastic idea. And then they sit together and they say, okay, 10 of us have built a Breeze Castle. That's all the same. And here it's so important to first turn AI off and ask people to do their creative thinking without AI. And then in a later stage, of course, you can work with AI, and maybe you can even mirror this and say, these are our ideas and these are the AI ideas. So we can easily see which ideas are really original. But AI, again, is homogenizing it. It's streamlining the thinking to the predictable. And what's missing is this unpredictable, this crazy stuff. Yeah, in this study, a lot of people had ideas for toys which didn't work, where everybody said, that's a stupid idea, that's a crazy idea. But that's exactly what you need in a brainstorm.
Interesting. I think, but maybe, I'm not sure if I agree.
Great.
No.
That's good.
But I just, because thanks to a colleague of mine, actually, he came up with an interesting example recently. And it's a example from mathematics, so please, I can't repeat everything. We always say that AI is trained on everything humans have already written, right? So that might lead to the fact, actually, that AI can sometimes become, like, as you just mentioned, the most conventional thinker in the room, just repeating the consensus back to us. But sometimes it actually does the opposite as well, because it came up with a different solution. And this specific solution to that problem, I mean, 80 years, people solved it in the same way. And then all of a sudden, AI came into the game and it came up with a different solution. Like, the essence of the story is, like, AI does not make everything alike or does not think alike. And of course, I mean, it does not produce genius is on demand, for sure. But I think it's more interesting that also it can actually discover something new that nobody has thought before of, because we are sometimes so in our beliefs For example, like these mathematicians, they believe that the best way was something they like. It was like arranging dots in a giant square grid, like graph paper. Okay. And then they have not thought about another field of expertise, for example, or another, if we think more interdisciplinary, actually, we get more solutions. So that was something people have never thought about. And all of a sudden, AI actually linked the dots and came up with a new solution. Yeah. So that might also happen.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's what I said in the beginning. Of course, it's not that AI is erasing our creativity completely. And of course, there are these cases. I know the study, and there were similar cases where in the end it turned out AI was just good at finding a solution which was hidden and which nobody knew. So yeah, I don't know if in this case it really took a pattern from a different field and transferred
from geometry
to mathematics, which is also kind of creativity based on patterns. Mm. Yeah. So I would not say that AI is always wrong and it's always hindering creativity. But the tendency is that we lose this human experience, this different experience, and we somehow polish everything and have this regression to the middle.
Yeah.
And that's also why brands are really worried, because they see after a while we will all sound the same.
Yes, exactly. All sound the
we
same.
Will lose this originality because we all use the same tools. We all think we are super innovative because we have a better prompt than the others. But of course, the others, I mean, they are as smart as you, and they have the same prompt, and they come up with very similar stuff. I mean, the live lab for this is LinkedIn. I mean, on LinkedIn, you see it already, because their people are really super lazy.
Yes.
And people are annoyed because they say everything sounds the same. That's true.
It's a good point. Actually, people need to realize as well. Some people don't realize because they don't read the other posts maybe on LinkedIn. Yeah. So that's a good point. So critical thinking, realization as well. And then actually the action for every individual.
My metaphor for this is just imagine you're driving on a highway, you use your navigation system, and you see there's a traffic jam. And you will lose an hour of your time, you're really annoyed, and then suddenly Google Maps suggests you a different route which goes through some
and
small
And I did this
villages.
Often, and I was so annoyed.
I never do that again.
But for a moment, you think you're a genius.
Yeah.
For a moment, you think, wow,
yes, I
have the solution. It saves me half an hour.
Oh, yeah.
I'm so fantastic. I mean, of course, you know that your algorithm in Google Maps is the same algorithm as for all the others. And then you look at the people who stay on the highway and you're like,
it's a great point. Thank you for sharing.
And then half an hour later, you stand on this in this small village with all the other smart people, because, of course, Google suggested the same solution for everybody. This route would have made sense for you, but it doesn't make sense if you send hundreds of people in this direction.
That's true. Stefan, let's talk about the human connection in the age of AI. Like, can authenticity be automated? For example, our listeners, we all know when you travel, for example, or go to a restaurant, you know, you have increasing automation. Check-in might be digital for hotel or flight, but then people still want to feel warmth, attentiveness, and personal service, right? So is there actually still someone personally to help the customer, you know, find the way, you know, in what aspects of human connection cannot be replicated by AI? And how do you see this whole scenario, you know? Could convenience come at the expense of a genuine connection, you know?
AI is fantastic at simulating empathy, of course. Yeah, we all know this. And that's also why people use AI most. So people, in all the statistics, how do people use AI and what are the use cases? The top use case is coaching, help with life challenges and stuff like that. So that's when people go to AI, because they get good advice. Other studies show, especially in coaching, it makes a difference if you know it's an AI. which has no cost and no effort, or if you know there's a human and the human spends some effort and the human is concentrating on me and invests some time, that makes a difference for us. The biggest risk I see, and that's similar to social media, is that typically if we interact with other humans, it always comes with a cost. So this is the social exchange theory. Sociologists say whenever we interact with someone, it has a benefit and it has a cost. So we invest something because we have to open up to the other person. The other person might judge us. The other person might disagree with us. The other person might not understand what we say. And the other person might expect something in exchange. So if I tell you about my relationship problems and you listen to me, you expect that then I listen to your problems. So there's always a price for human interaction, and AI removes this price. AI is for free. There is no psychological price I have to pay. And studies show, and that's the same as with social media some years before, that after interacting with AI, people are less satisfied with human interaction. Because they say, it was so easy with AI. It was so helpful. It was so easy. The AI listened to me. It was available 24/7. It didn't judge me. It gave me good advice. And now I talk to my friend and suddenly everything is complicated. My friend disagrees. My friend does not always approve what I say. And I see a big risk here because the same happened on social media with this instant reward. If you post something on social media, you get a response instantly and you feel great. This morning I posted something on LinkedIn. After 5 minutes, I had the first like. Fantastic. Instant reward. And compared to that, human interaction is a burden. It needs an effort, and studies show that that's a reason why people prefer to post online instead of talking to their friends, because they get this instant rewards. And I think with AI, it could be even worse, that people avoid human connections or they judge human connections in a different way because suddenly everything is so effortful.
And you see this conflict tendency. As well, I mean, you mean, right? Like the human interaction in general,
If I tell you about my personal problems, you will somehow judge me. Even as a coach, you would, in a certain way, humans always judge. You might criticize me. If I talk to my difficult friend about my relationship problems, he might say, Stefan, I guess you're completely wrong. Your girlfriend is fantastic and you see it wrong. You made a mistake. That's not what I want to hear. So I would rather turn to the AI, and the AI will always say, poor guy, and analyzer. you have been treated very bad, and I give you a solution. And there have been examples, for example, where people in the end got divorced. Because the AI confirmed their view and said, yes, you're AI right.
And they thought that's the right decision. They were convinced by AI.
And a good friend might have said, sorry, maybe you're a little bit too emotional right now. Maybe you should see it from a different perspective. Maybe you should have a long-term perspective. And the human aspect. Then you start thinking about your view. And I can completely resonate with this. I also discuss really heavy life problems with AI. And I realize it's less effort than calling a friend and talking to a friend. And it's the easier way. And if I don't like the answer from ChatGPT, I just close ChatGPT and open Gemini.
That's true.
Maybe I get
that's
a better
the second
answer
option.
There. If I open up to a friend and I don't agree to what this friend says to me, I cannot turn him off. I cannot just say, okay, forget it. We never talk about this.
It's a danger.
I call a different friend.
It's a good point.
So you think that might also, I mean, everything you just mentioned has an impact on our behavior as well. But what's then the consequence? So what should we consciously protect as AI becomes, as you just shared, like part of everyday life?
I think we should protect this plurality, this diversity. I think this is really super important to keep this diversity of views and to be aware that AI is pulling us towards a statistical average of human or American thinking. And the other thing is really moral judgment. Because AI doesn't have a morale. Nah? It cannot make a moral judgment. And you have this ability. You can say, I think this is right and this is wrong in an ethical or moral way. And then this ability to challenge the patterns. Because that's what moves societies forward, that there are people who say, yes, we always did it this way, but I challenge this. I have a vision of a different world. Yeah. See, for example, things like racism, gender equality. Yeah. If you look 30 years back, our society had a completely different view on that. But there were people who said, yes, but I don't agree to this anymore. I want a different world and I fight for this. And this challenging these patterns or breaking these patterns, this is something where I think humans are much better at than AI. Which doesn't mean AI will never break a pattern, but the tendency is always to say, we always did it that way. We keep it that way. And I think that's very human.
Yeah, and human qualities, like the human qualities we all appreciate, really, which are even becoming more and more important, as you mentioned, in the AI-driven world.
Yeah, and also this being difficult, creating friction. Yeah, we need people who create friction, who disagree and who are disruptive, and AI will not necessarily do this job. Of course, if you prompt it in a certain way, AI can also somehow take this role, but I think it's not a substitute for these people who just say, no, you all agree on this, I see it completely different, and I try something completely new and everybody thinks I will fail, but I try it anyway.
But do you think our society, and I'm thinking specifically about educational system, actually appreciate and value these people who think out of the box and maybe just set up say, nope, that's not how I will do it? Or
Yeah,
are
and
we
I
better than
mean,
AI or society?
I think it's a great question because I also worked for 23 years in a big corporation, and these people always had a difficult time. Yeah, it was always these non-conformists that were always the people who got promoted because everybody said, "Yeah, you're so difficult and you always disagree," and but they were still there. So some of these people were still there, and the company also made sure we keep some of these people. And I don't know if we lose this in the age of AI, where when everybody agrees and AI is always confirming your views, yeah, instead of challenging it. And maybe in the age of AIs, people start to value this even more. So I talked to a lot of people recently about these tendencies and about these impacts on cognition and human communication. And at least people listen and they are interested and they say, yeah, that's maybe it's really time now to talk about this and to talk about what does it do with our company. Especially young people in the company who joined the company, they grew up, or no, I think they didn't grow up with AI, but they spent their professional life and their time at the university with AI. And they don't bring these skills and this critical thinking, and more people are concerned about them.
But you know what? I just realized that, like in a recent workshop, actually, where teams had to present their findings, and there were five teams, and let's say four out of these five teams, they really had authentic, I would say, original thoughts, and you could tell. And then there was one team, and you could immediately tell, okay, this is AI generated. I mean, in terms of the structure, in terms of the pictures, how they presented it. And actually the teams who actually, I mean, everyone realized it, right? So that was obvious. And then the other teams actually complained. about this one team. So I think there is like this awareness. It is growing actually. And people are a little bit like not offended by they told me, but I mean, this is obviously AI generated. So we actually put all the efforts in and we did the research and we had like this brainstorming and discussions going on. So I think there
And also
awareness.
Students know this.
Yeah.
Also students are aware. It's not that the young generation, I mean, they're not stupid.
Yeah,
they see this. They see the impact and they know if I do my homework with AI, I don't learn anything.
Yeah. And I think
they are well
critical.
Aware of this. Yeah. The question is, how do we deal with this as a society?
Right.
Because I think the awareness is there. Also, young people say, I know, like me, I know I should take the stairs, but I still take the elevator.
Yeah.
So how do we create the space that people say, I train my critical thinking, I train this muscle, instead of saying, hey, actually, now you can do more homework than before. That's fantastic. So I give you more tasks.
Yeah. No, different tasks. Yeah.
More challenge.
So I think it's something we have to fix on a society, on a company level.
Yeah.
To say, how do we deal with this? Because for the individual, it's not very attractive to say, now I train my critical thinking muscle. That doesn't make any sense. Yeah. If I train my critical thinking muscle, the others will outperform.
Prisoners still not bad.
Yeah. But on a societal level, and if you talk to students and if you say, please, let's turn off your computers, let's now practice critical thinking without AI, they agree to this.
Yeah.
They know it's useful.
Yeah, that's what I think. I mean, the awareness actually exists.
Yeah. But can you imagine this in a company saying, I want your ideas on a new strategy. Please do it without AI.
Challenging.
I think that rarely happens.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I do it actually in my classes at uni, right? I do it and people appreciate it. I mean, not everyone for sure, because there's like this convenience thing, but I think more and more people actually, it's like a little bit.
It's a different
back.
Exercise. If you already say it as it is at the beginning, it's a different exercise for the company or for students or wherever.
And the first step is always the awareness. That's why I also like to talk to you about this, because I think it's important that people think about it, that they are aware, that they realize I'm more creative with AI, but as a group, we lose creativity, we lose diversity, we lose experience. And then think about the next step. What do we do with that? And what are the tasks where AI is fantastic? I mean, for 90% of the stuff, maybe AI is fantastic. But what are the tasks where I say, here, AI, really, this homogenization is not what I want.
But that means that you need a good leader within the corporations, the companies, who's actually encouraging the individuals to maybe step back from it. And
And you have to establish a certain culture. Saying this is our company culture. Now it's really about our point of difference. And here we need this human experience, this guy from India, this single mother with three children. And we need all these perspectives now here in this product development. And we don't want to smoothen everything with AI. And then we come up with the same solution as everybody else.
Definitely. So the world increasingly is shaped by AI, Stefan, but looking from today, going forward, like in the future, what gives you hope? What is the excitement? What do you think is going to change?
Yeah, first of all, I think AI can do fantastic things. AI can help us in drug discovery, in a lot of technologies. I mean, you mentioned mathematics. I think there are a lot of areas where AI can improve our life. That's the first thing which gives hope. And the other thing is that I realize people are realizing the negative effects.
Mm-hmm.
That gives me hope that people really will take action. I mean, you see it on LinkedIn. Everybody is annoyed about what's happening on LinkedIn. People also, when I talk to them, they say, I saw it in my company. I saw some presentations and they were all very similar. I don't want to have this anymore. So I think there will be a swing back to saying, asking exactly the same question you are asking in this podcast, also on a company, on a society level, to say, what can we do to stay human? I mean, here in Germany, we just had the big discussion here about this politician who held a speech in Auschwitz very empathic speech, and it turned out this was all written by AI. And people say that's not okay, or at least we had the discussion, is it okay, is it not okay?
And people realized it as well, so that's the bad thing. So they realized this is AI, you know?
And if someone holds a speech and says, wow, this was a very emotional moment for me, and then you realize that was all made up by AI, there was no emotional moment, you question people's authenticity. And I think this is happening now, and this is exactly the discussion we need right now. I don't have a final answer, but I also feel if someone gives a speech in such an emotional and sensitive moment, I feel it's wrong to do it with AI. There were other cases where journalists did opinion pieces with AI. And I was like, okay, if you tell me that's your opinion, I want to hear your opinion. And maybe the AI opinion was good and interesting, but I want to know, was it your opinion or was it an AI opinion? Yeah. That makes a difference for me somehow.
At the same time, I think sometimes we might judge somebody who's really a talented speaker, for example, or is quite gifted in terms of finding the right words, whatever it is. So, and we immediately assume, so that must be AI. That's not human.
Okay.
And I mean, if you think about these AI detectors, for example, I mean, we have that at the uni as well, for sure, for thesis and so forth. But my point is sometimes I'm not quite sure if people who are actually gifted in terms of being able to give like a wonderful speech, but everyone assumes, this is not human. It just can.
Yeah, it's too good to be true.
Actually, it's true. You punish the ones who are maybe quite excellent in what they're doing.
Absolutely. Now, for me, this happens with images. Whenever I see an image with something which is really...
This is AI.
I saw this movie where in Brazil the lady was pushed from the cliff in bungee jumping and they forget to fix the rope. I thought this is AI generated.
Exactly,
I was so sure, and then I did some research and I realized, wow, this really happened. It was a real accident and someone died in this accident, but I couldn't believe this because I see so many AI created videos. I don't trust anything anymore.
People get
more aware. So are we losing our trust? That might be another thing to discuss, right?
Yeah. They actually ask, second question, they're actually doubting it, right? They're actually questioning it. Is this a real image? Is this the speech? Is it real? Is it AI? Is it, people are looking twice now. You're looking at the corners, edges of the envy, AI generated. Yeah. So it's actually, this is the whole, what has actually developed the last couple of months and years.
And I think that's also a risk that with every speech, with every LinkedIn post, instead of listening to what people say, I try to find out, is it AI generated? Is there an M-dash in it? Or is there a certain structure in it, which is also not good. I don't know how much the EU regulation helps because beginning of August, we will have this regulation that at least for images, there needs to be a mark. And now they also published the official symbol for this, also for texts which have not been changed by a human. There has to be a mark on this. I don't know if this really helps.
Yeah, it will. No, it is more transparent maybe as well. It helps people to quickly make understand what is actually shown.
But it also shows me it makes a difference for people. Yeah. They are not just say, I don't care if the text is good, it's good. If it's bad, it's bad. But it makes a difference for people to say, is this really authentic or is it AI generated? And you can present me AI generated text, but I want to know.
Yeah. They don't accept it as easily anymore. They question it.
So it's okay for me if I read a piece on Spiegel Online and it's AI generated, if I know it's AI generated. But if someone says this is an opinion piece, and then I realize that was not your opinion, that was just the statistical average of all opinions in the world, that ticks me off somehow.
Stefan, what are you working at the moment? What's in the pipeline for you, for Stefan?
Many questions.
Like, what's in the future?
Yeah, for me, I'm not an IT person, so I look at this whole topic of AI and the develops from an outside perspective, which I think is important. Yeah. We cannot leave it to the IT experts. We need people from different areas, interculturalists, sociologists, people from all different areas to look at that. And I'm currently trying to get into contact or get into discussions with companies about that, because I think it's a time now to go a step back and say, hey, we all worked with AI now for 2 years. We introduced it in our companies. We all work with Copilot or ChatGPT. And maybe now it's a time for the leadership team to look at these other aspects and to discuss, do we see this already? How relevant is it for us? What do we do with it? So that's what I'm preparing now, really doing workshops with companies to discuss about that. And I see a certain openness. And the question is, when will companies be ready to really pay for a workshop, invest some time and do this? But I see people are responding to this and they say, we see this already. Good. You don't have to convince us with all these studies. Yeah. We saw this already in our last innovation workshop, and we see this already in our strategic proposals and everything.
Yeah. And if anyone wants to reach out to you, what's the best way to contact you?
LinkedIn. I'm on LinkedIn, and I just posted a series of 9 posts about exactly what we are talking about. So if people want to read it and see fancy AI-generated infographics, go on LinkedIn.
Check with a disclaimer.
Yeah, of course. I mean, that's funny. I mean, I talk about this, and when I post on LinkedIn, I use AI-generated infographics, which were done with Notebook LM. So I also had to laugh when I started with this series, because I realized how bizarre this is to say I use AI, I talk about the dangers, and still I use it to create the infographics.
Yeah. But I think that mirrors probably how everyone is navigating these years or times right now, right?
So. Yeah. And at least I would, of course, tell Notebook LM, this is my opinion about the topic. This is what I want to say. And then I would check, is my opinion really reflected in the infographic, or did it smoothen it? And for example, for the diversity topic, I was very, very sharp on this diversity topic to say we lose diversity. And if you are interested in diversity in your company, turn off ChatGPT, which is, of course, it's a polarized statement. It's a hook. And every time I wanted to write a LinkedIn post with it or blog post, AI took this out a little bit and it smoothed it. And I said, no, that's my statement. And I want people to remember this and to think about it. So I always had to bring it in again. So LinkedIn, I think it's a best way. Mm-hmm. I also have my website. You can put it in
Yes, we put it in the show notes. Yeah, thank you. That. Yes.
In the show notes. I can also send you, if you want, I can send you some of the studies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
so if the listeners really want to invest the time and the struggle and
more about
the
it.
Critical
yes.
thinking to read the studies your own, of course you can do this.
Yeah. It's a fascinating topic for sure. So if you could give our community, or each individual of our community, I have to say now, one rule, one line to put on their wall or in their journals about using AI without losing themselves in the process, what would it be?
I would give them a quote, and I will read it because it's a quote I just borrowed from someone else. So Dave Boyce, and I don't know if he invented it or if he just re-quoted, he said, automate the predictable so you can humanize the exceptional.
Oh, this is very good.
And it resonated with me. Automate the predictable so you can humanize the exceptional. I think if we use AI in that way, we can really use the potential and still keep our humanness, our human experience, our plurality, our ability to challenge patterns instead of just working with these patterns forever, our moral judgment, our ethical compass and everything. So for me, this is a guideline which makes a lot of sense.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for sharing.
Thank you for the wonderful conversation. I think we
thank you.
Touched upon many, many, many areas, and we probably could talk for another hour.
Yeah. Thank you for being our guest again, a second time around.
Maybe you invite me for the third time. That would be, wow.
Stay tuned.
Thank you so much, Stefan.
Bye.
Thank you.